Hi, hi. The episode that follows is part of a 7-episode series on the trans allegory of I Saw the TV Glow. Spoilers abound. Be sure you've watched the movie before listening. It's very, very trans, so beautiful and so important, but it is very emotionally heavy. You'll want to be in a good headspace and heart space before watching, and be sure to have someone to hug after. Onward we go. Welcome to Tilly's Trans Tuesdays. So many people have been asking for this and waiting for it, and I'm delighted to tell you that I took untold levels of psychic damage just to bring you the intentional trans allegory of I Saw the TV Glow, Part 1. Hi, I'm Tilly Bridges, your host, and I'm joined by my writing partner, my best friend, my wife, our token cis representation, the lady who's never given me psychic damage, Susan Bridges.
Hello. That just sounds like a Pokemon thing to me. Psychic damage.
Well, there's psychic Pokemon, right? So I guess technically it is.
Pokemon! Yay! Okay.
Our guest this week is Lila Sturges, the writer of numerous comics such as The Science of Ghosts, which is so good, Lumberjanes, The Magicians, Dune, the movie, graphic novel, and a whole bunch of other stuff. She lives in Portland, Oregon with her wife and a 3-legged cat named Greg. Welcome, Lila.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for wanting to be here. You specifically said you wanted to. When I said I was doing episodes about this movie, you were like, oh, I would love to talk about it.
Yeah, because I think I had just seen it. And so yeah. I was very, very excited and couldn't think about anything other than this movie. So,
yeah, it kind of does that.
It does.
We'll get there in a minute. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been about a year and a half since the last time you were on the show here. So I wanted mm-hmm. to ask if anything had changed for you in terms of your transition during that time.
Golly gee. I mean, I think of myself as in many ways having transitioned, right?
Yeah.
So I think there's still like some little stuff that I would like to do in terms of like maybe a procedure or two, but
sure.
I feel like I am mostly settled, you know,
yeah.
in terms of transitioning. And I think the last year and a half has been an interesting one for me because it's been, I don't know, 7-8 years since I transitioned. And
yeah.
I've kind of entered into a phase for a while where I felt kind of jaded about the whole thing and just kind of honestly feeling a little negative about, you know, what it's like to be trans in the United States right now. And
it's tough, yeah.
Feeling just a lot of, you know, I feel like we take a lot of psychic damage, as you say.
We do.
And going, leaving the house sometimes, you know, and
yeah.
that's tiresome. But I think that, you know, I'm entering a new phase where I am remembering the sort of energy that I had around my initial transition, right? And how I
yeah.
used that energy to like change things about my life that I didn't like, you know? And I feel like that sort of renewal, that renewal that is transition is not like a one-time thing. It's not, it's a sort of like an energy source, like, you know, like the force that permeates all living things. And we can use it to grow and change, you know, all the time if we need to.
Yeah, I think that's actually really beautiful and very poignant because it is also true because transition has brought about a lot of changes for me outside of like physical changes or the like, you know, from HRT or from just changing my clothes. But it's changed so much for me in how I perceive the world, how I move through the world, what mm-hmm. things mean to me and how I interact with the world. So, it's like a constant learning process. And I don't know if mine will ever be done because of that. You know, I feel like I'm always going to be learning more about myself. And I think that's pretty mm-hmm. cool. So
I think it is really cool. I think I wasn't expecting to hit kind of a doldrums in the process, But I
Sure.
did. And sometimes, you have to go through a plateau before you can start climbing again.
You never know how it's going to go, right? That's the scariest part about it. When you start, you never know what you're
You
going to
never
get out
know.
of it, and it's not always going to be a straight path. I had my own setbacks with it too, a couple years back. So it's, yeah. Stick with it, folks. It's a
Stick with it.
process. It's a process.
Yes. And this movie that we're going to talk about, gosh, I think the thing to remember is that there's always a way, there's always time,
Yes.
there's always hope. And I think that's what,
Always.
and I hope that that is what our takeaway from this movie is, even though it might seem on the surface to be kind of a bleak
Yeah.
statement. I don't know that it is.
I don't know that it is either, but we will get there way at the end
Yes.
in episode 7. So you're gonna have to keep coming back to listen to all of these.
Yeah. Spoilers. No spoilers.
Yeah. Well, before we jump in there, one other thing I wanted to say was that last time you were here was episode 3 of this show. You were the first guest we had that wasn't involved with making the show, because the first two episodes was our sound editor, Jillian. Hi, Jillian. Sorry if this ends up a mess. Okay. So I was still kind of feeling out the show, and I feel like you and I were friends back then, but I feel like we've become much better friends since
Yes,
then.
I think
And
so.
so now I feel comfortable enough that I have to take a moment to say that when I came out publicly and in the back of my book, Begin Transmission, The Trans Allegories of the Matrix, in both of those, I had to thank you because you were a huge part of making me feel like I could come out and transition and be me and be a writer and have a career. And it meant so much to me to see you out there visible and just being awesome. And so I wanted to take a moment to thank you in person for helping me become me.
Oh, thank you. That means so much to me. You have no idea. I really, really needed to hear that. I appreciate it very much.
Well, it's all true. I adore you.
Same.
Before we dive in, do you want to let people know where they can find you online after listening?
Oh, sure. Right now, I'm not super easy to find because of the Twitterness of the
Mm.
lack of Twitter.
Yeah.
But I am on Instagram, Lila K. Sturgis. I'm trying to post more there. I'm on Blue Sky, if folks are aware of what Blue Sky is. I'm lilasturgis.com on Blue Sky. And I think Blue Sky is really neat, and you should join it and give it
It
a shot.
is. It's my favorite of the new replacements. It's not perfect, and it has,
Kitty.
oh, Dirtbag Henry has appeared
Kitty
again.
cub.
He sure does. Also, for those listening, if you I've ever thought about coming by the Tillyverse Discord server that is at the end. Lila also pops in there from time to time.
I
So,
do. I'm not, I
yeah.
still haven't really figured out Discord, but when I do, it'll be at the Tillyverse Discord.
That means so much to me, and all that make that place happen. So thank you. All right, so let's get talking about I Saw the TV Glow, because it is time for another installment of Tilly Vision, as some of my readers, fans, I don't know, named it because the masses demanded it, but also because I really, really wanted to. I love doing these deep dive breakdowns, but they are very time consuming, much more so than the average Trans Tuesday. And this is why, for those listening, I don't do them as often as you might like me to, even though I would also like to. But the list of movies and TV I have to cover for these is already dauntingly long, but we will get through them all somehow in time. This one was especially tough, though, because I Saw the TV Glow has left every trans person that I know in literal tears. It's a really important but incredibly difficult watch, and I took 6 hours to go through it and take notes, and over 10 hours to do the write-up. And it's been really difficult, as what it's saying is not easy to get through, because many, or maybe even most, of us trans folks have lived it. At first, though, people were repeatedly asking me to do one of my trans allegory write-ups on it. I wasn't sure if I would. I wasn't sure if I could. But then I saw some trans folks missing some important things about what it was saying. And I saw cis people, yes, even with this movie that is basically all supertext, a term I coined to mean the opposite of subtext, think that this is only a story about a kid who's obsessed with a TV show. And so I knew I had to. Art is subjective, of course, and everyone takes something different from it. But I feel like a lot of people, cis and trans alike, have missed some of what the movie itself lays out for you to interpret, especially the ending. So I knew I had to tackle this, but I didn't know how. And at first I thought I'd eschew my regular timestamp breakdown and talk about it more broadly, maybe in only one or two essays. But then when I began my research and note-taking watch, I realized that it was much too densely packed with brilliance for that. But at first, Okay, look, this is hard to explain because this movie feels sacred to me. It is holy. It is the clearest depiction I have ever seen put to film of the war with gender dysphoria and what it does to those of us who have it. It's so accurate that it hurts so much. It's so important because this is our pain. This is our lives, such as they were. And so it feels a little like blasphemy to break it down piece by piece. And I worry that in doing so, I'd lose so much of what it meant to me. The good news is that didn't happen. I only find it more sacred now by having to break it down this way wounded me deeply because it meant diving into and examining the most painful part of my life and the most painful part of life for, I'd wager, every trans person who struggled with dysphoria. So at times, this will not be an easy listen because the movie isn't an easy watch and not because it's bad or harmful or bigoted, but because it's so true to our pain. But it's really important. It's so, so important to talk about this, to help people understand. This is what we're dealing with. Grab somebody you love who will hold you after watching and listening because we're all going to need it. It should also go without saying, but massive spoilers ahead. Buckle up, my babies. Here we go. Lila, before I get into more of my early thoughts, before we get into the timestamps, I wanted to ask you, what was your initial reaction after your first watch of this movie? What did it do to you? How did you feel?
Well, I was not aware of what the film was when I saw it, which was kind of amazing, but also kind of, I can't say the word that I want to say because we're trying to stay PG-13, but it messed with my head significantly because I did not see that coming, right?
Yeah,
I didn't
me
see
either.
Coming that it was going to be not just a trans allegory, which I think we have seen before, but a deliberate, specifically trans story.
Right.
That is very intentionally about the struggle with dysphoria and transphobia that trans people go through internally. And I think it was the fact that it was about the internal struggle and how it depicted that internal struggle so beautifully and so effectively that it just took my breath away. And when I finished watching it the first time, I just felt gutted. My first viewing also, I came away with a very bleak read of the story because I missed one very crucial shot because I wasn't paying attention. And I didn't see it.
Well, there's so much to absorb, right? Like,
there's
so much is happening. You're feeling so much. You're going
to
miss little things. I think a lot of people missed that shot. I did too my first time, but we'll get there way back again.
Yeah.
Part 7.
But there are things that may be difficult to interpret. There are, you know, I described it as kind of like a very friendly art film in the sense that it is kind of arty in a lot of ways. But it's not alienating, I don't think. It doesn't take a lot to interpret this film. The film is very generous and it gives you everything you need, I think, to interpret it. But there's still plenty of vagueness. There's still plenty of ambiguity around some things. And I think those will be fun to talk about.
Yeah. You know, when I watched it, all I heard from so many trans people I know was that, oh my God, this movie, you know, it meant so much to me, or I cried so much. And you have to see this. It's, you know, and I was like, oh, well, Jane Schoenbrunn is trans, so that's really cool. I definitely have to check this out. But I had no idea what it was, what to expect. Well, people were saying it was kind of horror, right? And that's all I knew. And it's not horror.
You didn't tell me anything. I didn't know a single thing. And then I was like, what the hell is happening?
Well, okay, let me ask you. As a cis person who is very keyed into what trans people go through from me and being on the show with me all the time and all the talk that we've done about trans issues, did you pick up on the transness of it? How did it make you feel?
I think maybe I didn't pick up on it until I was at least a third of the way through.
Okay. Well, sure. If you don't know what you expect, that makes sense.
Because, I had no idea what I was watching.
Right.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. Like, it wasn't like, especially, the horror type element of some of the things. So, I was, like, my brain was trying to put this movie in a place, and it's hard to put in a place.
It sure is. It's very unique.
And
yeah.
I think that also is kind of makes it so you miss things at first.
Sure.
Just kind of distracted as your brain is trying to figure out, what am I watching here?
It's very disorienting at the beginning, I think by intent. And so, it leaves you it gives you that feeling of what is happening, what's going on. And that is such a key part of how you feel when you have dysphoria. So I think that's a really cool thing to have worked in there.
But also the fact that it like focuses so strongly on the main character.
Yeah.
That can be hard to do well.
Sure.
And I'm just thinking about books because I read like voraciously.
You do.
Like I've definitely read a book where it's like focused on one character.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, I need something else to happen. Like, this is...
Sure.
There's only one A story. Where's the B? Where's the C? But this sure doesn't feel that way.
Yeah, that's a very interesting thing to point out because Owen is really... It's all about Owen. And, yeah, like, Maddie is there, and she's really important, but it is all about Owen. And there's, like, Owen and Maddie are, like, the only two characters in the whole movie, really. Like, the other people are just there to orbit around Owen. They're not characters in their own right, really.
Right. And I also appreciated the deliberate pacing. It did not feel like it was too long, but
yeah,
the lingering sort of shots in the way you linger on a feeling.
Sure.
Is very much, it really added to the overall experience.
Yeah. Actually, that's a good point because I think the way it lingers on some shots almost just enough to make you a little uncomfortable, that
right,
dread that it gives you. It's really magnificent in that way.
Yeah, but I think it's also a very friendly movie in a lot of ways. I think the temptation could have been to make this a lot more sort of artsy.
Sure.
Yes.
And more alienating. But I think it feels very brisk when you're watching it.
It does.
It doesn't feel plodding.
Yeah,
and
it
it's entertaining. And it's very entertaining.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
But it is, you know, I think, Susan, I think it's fascinating what you said about, like, if you have to follow this one character, you know, and just their journey through the course of an entire story, and how that can be challenging sometimes. And I think you're right. And I think what's especially challenging is a character who has an incredibly flat affect, the way Owen does.
Yeah.
But it's just a testament to the two, both actors who play,
they're so good.
Owen are both great in different ways. But the, you know, Justice Smith, I think, just deserves all the awards for being able to put so much depth and humanity into a character who barely speaks, who shows almost no affect throughout the course of the movie. It's astonishing to me.
It is. There's spots we're going to talk about, especially bits of his performance that really affected me and sold a lot of what happened in the movie as we get.
Like, oh, and it works so well because, like, you think about, you know, the depiction of a kid around that age.
Yeah.
And the masculine need to not show too much emotion and everything, like that constant pressure to conform.
Yeah.
I feel that in his performance too.
Well, yeah. And you also, there's also, I mean, again, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but there's a thing where dysphoria, when it's really bad, can kind of flatten your emotions and can kind of make everything feel muted and gray. And I get a lot of that from their, both of their performances, but especially Justice Smith. I don't know, like, he gets, again, getting way ahead of myself, but he gets the dead eyes that you see in the photos
eyes
of every trans person before, pre-transition. And I don't know how you do that as an actor, but it was amazing. But
yeah, I
okay,
think
okay.
You tap into something. And one thing I want to say too is that there's a lot of, I think, universality in this story. And my spouse, who is not a trans woman, sobbed at the end of this film.
Yeah.
For reasons that have nothing to do with you know, transness. So I think that there's, you know, there's a lot of feeling in this film. And I think it shows that, for me, it's always, there's this temptation to say the trans experience is unlike any other experience, right? It's very difficult to map things onto the trans experience because it's kind of, I think, sui generis in a lot of ways. But I think the emotions are universal. And I think that's something that is captured very well in this film.
I would agree. I think, yeah, like, you may not know, cis people, what it is like to be trans or to go through what we go through, but trans people are just human beings. And so there's a lot of commonalities in what we go through emotionally and mentally and things like that, which I talked about in a lot of my other essays. But
yeah,
okay.
This movie can be appreciated by everyone.
Yeah.
And especially when we're in a media landscape that just loves to take LGBTQ content and say, well, this is for you. And not for anyone else.
If they even produce it at all.
If they even make it in the first place, which is very irritating.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, let's move on.
Let's move on.
All right, here we go. Right up front, let's just get this out of the way. This story is about two trans people, Isabel and Tara, who have been forced down into the false cis shells of Owen and Maddie. So to make this as abundantly clear as I can, the world of the pink opaque is the real world. Writer-director Jane Schoenbrunn, who is trans, confirms this themselves in the commentary. This means everything that you see with Owen and Maddie is not real. But how can that be? It's going to take this entire series of episodes to explain it to you. But note that two other mega-intentional allegories for transness, the Matrix franchise and the Barbie movie, both also deal with false realities in determining what is quote-unquote real. And for that matter, so does season one of Silo, which I also did a series of essays about. This is a common thing for trans folks, because we spend our lives gaslit by basically the entire world that everything we know and feel about ourselves is wrong and cannot possibly be true. Yet that doesn't change how we feel or what we know, and so reality doesn't feel real because it's not. This is what being forced to live a lie and told you're wrong about your own sense of self does to you. For clarity, I will refer to Owen by he, him, and Maddie by she, her. But Owen's true self is Isabel, she, her, and Maddie's true self is Tara, they, them. I believe the chalk you see on the street at key points in the film is an indication of Owen's present mental state, of what's going on in his head. And much like The Matrix, which I wrote my whole book about, and with the essays on Barbie, I saw the TV glow uses color as a key part of its allegory. Pink is the most important, where it stands for transness, or access to your transness, transition, etc. The very name of the quote-unquote show, The True Reality, that Owen and Maddie are obsessed with, The Pink Opaque, is also part of this. Opaque is there because this movie is from the perspective of Owen, a pre-transition, pre-egg crack trans woman. And when you exist in that state, your own transness is a mystery to you. It's opaque. You cannot see through it to what waits on the other side. For those unfamiliar with trans colloquialisms, an egg is someone who doesn't realize they're trans yet, and their egg cracking is when they realize they're trans. In fact, this is also why the pink opaque tattoo is a pink ghost. Pink equals trans, ghost equals spirit. It's a signifier that your spirit, your soul, your true inner self is trans. Also of huge importance is green, which is representative of gender dysphoria. Blue is despair. Red is a danger warning for both real and imagined dangers. Yellow, as in the Matrix films, is fear. Owen, the name, has a mixed and indefinite meaning, but it could mean sheep, good slash desire, or born of. But when you look at all of those, for a person who's trans and doesn't know it or why their life is miserable, it hits kind of hard. Isabel traces back to Elizabeth, which means my God is an oath. Oaths are promises about your future actions, and Isabel is the future and true person Owen will become. I don't think this is saying that Owen sees his true form of Isabel as a god, but like pre-transition and even early transition, I would think of my potential quote-unquote final form as something sacred. A blissful, happy existence I hope to one day achieve. And I kind of did, and you can too. So to me, that's what this is implying. Isabel is the otherworldly, divine form Owen wishes he could be, even if he can't admit that to himself. Maddie could be short for Madeline or Madison, so let's look at both. Madeline traces back to Magdalene from Mary Magdalene from the Christian New Testament. Jesus cleansed her of evil spirits, and then she stayed with him through his sacrifice. And that sure reads like ridding yourself of dysphoria to sacrifice your false form and attain the divinity of your true form, doesn't it? Madison traces back to Matilda, which means strength in battle. This is also what Tilly means, by the way, so now you know not to mess with me. And I find this fascinating because of the two, Maddie is definitely the strong one and even takes the place of a weapon during the movie, which we'll talk about way down the line. But both of those readings work for Maddie, which is pretty genius. Tara means elevated place, which sure is what you could call the post-transition final form of a trans person. It could also mean star, which is elevated and in the heavens shining like a beacon. Both of those meanings work for Tara. I love it when writers do this shit.
There's also, can I just say,
yes,
very intentional. The name Tara is very important to fans of a particular television show, which is referenced numerous times in numerous ways in this movie. And I'm sure you have, you know, plans to talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer and its impact on this film, but it is not small. And Tara is a very important character in Buffy. And the actress who plays Tara appears in this film.
Appears, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
So I just want to lay
actually,
that out.
no, it's good that you're here because Buffy is one fandom I never really got into. So my knowledge about it has all been picked up on the periphery from pop culture, but I've never seen the show really. Like we watched the first couple seasons and it was a long time ago, and that's all I've ever seen. So I don't really know
So
much
please
about it.
tell us all the Buffy facts.
Yes,
Well,
chime in with all the Buffy facts when you have them.
I will. But the important thing to know about Tara is that she is much beloved among Buffy fans. Also, she is one of the primordial barrier gays, sadly. That she is, unfortunately, in the show. So
Well, there are a lot of bad tropes in media, aren't there?
there are.
I also believe that Owen's mom is a stand-in for his femininity, and his dad is a stand-in for his masculinity. For many of us, our mothers and fathers are our first examples of access to both femininity and masculinity, and that shapes a lot of how we see both of those things. All right, it's time to dive in by the timestamps. Special shout out and thanks to Millicent Alexis Book for helping me obtain some of the screenshots that you can see across all parts of this in the text versions of these deep dives. 33 seconds in, we see our first chalk drawing setting up Owen's internal state. Most prominent in there is the sad blue ghost. You've hopefully already seen the movie, so you know the pink opaque symbol of transness is a pink ghost with glasses and wide open eyes. What do glasses help you do? See clearly. This ghost is blue, which is despair. Its eyes are clouded and can't see things clearly. This is a direct and clear indication that Owen is the furthest from his true self, from transition. Inside, he's a mess, and weren't we all? We'll get to the ice cream truck at the end of the street in a little bit when there's a clearer shot of it, but note that that's where his path he's on right now will lead him.
I think it's important to point out at the very beginning, from jump, that Owen is that thing we all love as students of literature, an unreliable narrator. And not only is Owen an unreliable narrator, but it's actually called out in the text that Owen is, in fact, an unreliable narrator. And there's a reason why he is. And I think that's absolutely beautiful. But so we have to take everything that narrating Owen says with a grain of salt.
Yeah, because he's seeing it all through his own dysphoric window, and so he doesn't know what reality is. Yeah.
And I love the chalk drawings. They're so beautiful.
They're
They're
very good.
gorgeous, yeah.
1 minute, 11 seconds. Young Owen's watching TV, changing channels. He's searching for something, meaning, clues about himself, answers to questions he doesn't know how to ask. I did this too. Many trans people do. See the episode on searching for meaning when you're trans and don't know it. 1 minute, 20 seconds. The screen and his face go pink. Transness is here in a commercial for the pink opaque. This is his first encounter with the idea and concept of transness, even if he can't name it or understand it. Something in him is saying, wait, my life is wrong. The world is wrong. This is not who I am. This is not reality. 1 minute, 28 seconds, quoting from the commercial, Isabel's bathroom has a new supernatural infestation that no exterminator can take care of. Bathrooms are the most heavily gendered spaces we have. The Matrix uses them specifically for this same reason. A quote, supernatural infestation is gender dysphoria. It infests your mind and it is a power you cannot control pre-transition. And no exterminator or specialist or outside person can fix it. Only we can. The Matrix again deals with this exact same thing. No one is coming to save us but us. We are the one we've been waiting for to save us. Isabel, in a pink dress, Isabel is the true Owen, pink equals trans, leaps out the bathroom window between green dysphoria curtains. Transition lets her slip past dysphoria. Isabel walks down the street with an axe and has the pink opaque tattoo, which we can see is the polar opposite of the ghost drawing in the opening chalk shot. She's then walking with the axe on a football field and gives a slow and sad wave, like she wants someone to notice her or is saying goodbye, which is basically saying, here I am, Owen, notice me, be me, or you're going to lose me. Remember this for when we talk about the football field later on.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, this, I love that this promo for an upcoming episode of a TV show establishes so much of the visual language of the movie. It's like, here's what to expect, you know? Here's the language we're going to be
It's such
using.
good foreshadowing.
It's so smart.
And also, football fields are a very traditionally male space, spaces where trans women pre-transition often find ourselves, not exactly on football fields, but you know what I mean, in spaces for men. This is metaphor. but she has an axe and is ready to fight. 1 minute, 40 seconds. They can't hurt you if you don't think about them, said from the TV while Owen's face is in pink and he seems mesmerized. This is what I and many other trans people told ourselves about our weird and complicated gender feelings all our lives. If we just don't think about it, it can't hurt us and we won't have to do anything about it. Because that always works. Oi.
So real.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Anthems for a 17-Year-Old Girl by Yule plays. The title sure says a lot, and I'm not going to quote all the lyrics, but it can definitely be read as a person leaving their fake life behind and changing into someone new, but being super uncomfortable with it and wishing they weren't trans. Here's a small excerpt. Used to be one of the rotten ones, and I liked you for that. Now you're all gone, got your makeup on, and you're not coming back. Can't you come back? Ouch. 2 minutes. The colors of the parachute. I have a very trans pride flag adjacent scheme as we cut to that parachute and young Owen walking inside it. His first encounter with his transness has opened him up. This feels representative of him exploring the feelings inside about his transness. All the other kids, if you look, they're just playing, but he is walking, searching, alone. This is foreshadowing the inflatable planetarium near the end of the film, where he has an important choice to make. But here, there's no choice, only exploration of what he finds within.
And he's touching it, too.
He's touching it. He rubs it, yeah. Gently, gently. Like, what is this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
3 minutes, 16 seconds. Teen/adult Owen. It was raining that night, and I couldn't sleep, so I started my favorite TV show again, The Pink Opaque. He keeps coming back to his transness. Also, although we haven't seen it happen in the movie yet, you've watched it already and know when Owen first goes to Maddie's house to watch the TV show, it's raining. The rain reminds him of the first time he truly connected with his inner self and his transness, so he puts the show on again. I think this fire we see him looking at here is his inner fire, his desire to become and exist as his true self. He's staring at it, he's contemplating, trying to make his choice. It will take him the rest of the movie to make it. But you can tell what's informing the interim choices he makes. Look at the light on his face. It's all yellow. Fear. He tosses something on the fire. It flares. And then he sits and looks at it with those sad, dead eyes. And again, that's what the eyes of every trans person pre-transition look like in our photos, mine included. It's tremendous, tremendous acting from Justice Smith. I wonder if Jane gave him any kind of special direction on how to clue into that, because I'm sure that they, you know, felt it. Two saw it in their own photos. 4 minutes, 14 seconds. Young Owen is at Void High with his mom, who is voting. In the commentary, Jane Schoenbrunn said the school they shot in already began with a V, and it would have cost too much to change it, especially on the football field. So they just picked a word that started with V. But void is perfect because life is very much like a void pre-transition.
I think it's great how Jane was able to sort of like roll with things and come up with stuff that works, even if it's like not maybe what was intended. As my understanding is that the Pink Opaque was the name of a Cocteau Twins compilation that they stuck in there it wasn't intentional. It was stuck in there as like a...
It was like a placeholder.
Like a placeholder. And then later they were like, oh no, this is perfect actually.
This is perfect. Yeah. Happy accidents do happen.
Mm-hmm.
Just like also Void High School. The initials are VHS, which is what Owen watches it on, right? That's so good.
That's brilliant. Okay.
I just love Void because I feel like high school is the place where kids start to figure out who they are. So, like, it's a blank canvas kind of thing. Like,
sure.
That's where you start to have the interactions that shape your future.
Yes. And it's made very clear that the institution itself will be of no use to you. I think that beautiful scene where Owen is headed to the dark room and you just see all these incredibly banal slogans. You know, I think I love that.
Yeah, we're going to talk about those, but later on. Okay.
Right.
4 minutes, 47 seconds. Owen sees Maddie for the first time. Also pay attention to the school mascot being vultures, which is very much what it feels like every transphobic cis person in the world is. Circling you, waiting for you to fall so they can pick your carcass clean. Maddie's reading the Pink Opaque episode guide. She leaves, he watches her go, his face in a blue light. In his first sight of Maddie, he saw in her the same thing he saw in the ad for the show. Something he recognized within himself but couldn't identify, and it makes him sad. maybe because he wishes he could be like her, having access to transness with the episode guide. I've mentioned in multiple Trans Tuesdays how I had a friend pre-transition that I always felt an intimate connection with that I couldn't explain, different from just friendship, and it was absolutely not romantic or sexual. I had no idea what it was. We lost touch, reconnected a few years into my transition, and she'd transitioned too. It happens. We can't define it, but sometimes we can see it in each other. Owen's mom calls him to the voting booth. Look at the yellow curtains. Why would he fear the voting booth? Well, he doesn't, but it's symbolic of what he does fear, because what is voting? A choice for the future. And what does Owen have trouble making through the entire movie? A choice for his future. It terrifies him. You'll see yellow used a lot in this way during the movie if you watch for it. Veils or barriers between Owen and that which he fears. Our fear keeps us from what we desire, keeps us from ourselves, our true selves. And once he's in that voting booth, look at the lighting and all the choices. It's a blue-green. Dysphoria and despair are all he sees as his options. 6 minutes, 1 second. Owen walks the school hall, past those signs that Lila mentioned that are too dark to read here. Those signs are important, but note that right now, at this age, they're just shadows to him. Unclear. He hasn't absorbed their messages yet. We'll discuss them more later on when they become clear to him. 6 minutes, 29 seconds. As he walks through the cafeteria, the tables have been turned upside down. In the commentary, Jane says they're, quote, like turtles. If you turn a turtle on its back, it can't move or right itself. It's vulnerable. They're trying to convey to you that Owen is in a vulnerable state here, his mind having started to wonder about his true identity and not being able to make sense of it. And that is a genius little detail, let me tell you what.
It's a gorgeous visual image, too. It's
yeah,
kind of an
right?
unsettling image. And
it
there's
is.
There's this sort of like, this is a word that gets overused a lot lately, but there's an extremely powerful liminal quality to a lot of the spaces in this
yes,
film, which is
yeah.
very appropriate for the story. And this is one of them.
Yeah, you're right. It's a very liminal movie, even setting so much of it in the suburbs, which is sort of a liminal space between rural and urban, right? It's the whole movie is like you're stuck in this place between.
And the sort of dreamlike quality.
Yeah.
Because it's not really real.
Yeah, yeah. In here, the Fruitopia machine, a very bright pink, is a huge "there is transness here" sign. In the commentary, Jane said it announces welcome. And to a kid looking for more information about his own transness, yeah, it would. We've barely gotten started, but we're going to break there for this week, and there is so much more to show you. Thanks for being here, Lila.
I'm so happy to be here. I look forward to next time.
Yes, so much more to go. Tilly Bridges and Transmission. Tilly's Trans Tuesdays is hosted by Tilly Bridges and Susan Bridges, with audio editing and sound mixing by Jillian Morgan. The Google Doc and social media versions of this week's topic and all past topics are available at tillystranstuesdays.com. Special thanks to Daisy and Jane for the use of Sorry Not Sorry as our show's theme music. Please stop by and show your support at daisyandjane.bandcamp.com and soundcloud.com/daisyandjane. You can find me at Tilly Bridges on Blue Sky, Twitter, and Hive, on Mastodon at tillybridges@mastodon.social, at facebook.com/tillysbridges, and on Insta and Threads at heckyeahtillybridges. And you can find Susan on most of those at Susan L. Bridges. You can find Jillian at audiojillian on Blue Sky. You can join the Tillyverse Discord server by following the link at the very bottom of tillystranstuesdays.com. We hold regular watch parties for the Matrix films and other trans movies, where I do a live Q&A, and it's blossomed into a wonderfully supportive, compassionate, kind community of friends. We'd love to have you join us. For more information, visit pendantaudio.com. Thanks for listening.